Welcome to Locked On Warriors, your daily podcast on all things Warriors, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Wes Goldberg, Warriors beat reporter for the Mercury News, and on today's show, my colleague and columnist Dieter Kurtenbach joins me to discuss how the league's new salary cap structure impacts the Warriors and some of our favorite targets for the trade exception and the mid-level exception.
You are Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Happy to be joined by my Bay Area News Group colleague, Dieter Kurtenbach, who wrote a column Tuesday saying that with the luxury tax relief the NBA will be providing these teams, the Warriors have no excuse but to spend big this offseason. There are so many ways to take this. But I think the biggest thing fans will be wondering about is if this is a green light to use that trade exception, Dieter.
Well, I would argue it's a green light because you look at the roster breakdown of this Warriors team currently, and nobody could make a reasonable case that this is a cream of the crop roster. We obviously know that the Warriors have a core three. I don't care how you feel about Andrew Wiggins. He's clearly a solid starting caliber wing in the NBA. But where championships are won and lost is in depth and with the second unit. And right now, you're dealing with a team whose second unit accomplished 15 total wins last year. Clearly, that is not a good recipe moving forward. And if the Warriors' reason that they weren't going to use the $17.2 million Andre Iguodala trade exemption was that it was going to cost a lot of money in luxury tax, I just don't think that that excuse holds water anymore, not with the relief, as you said, that the NBA is now going to give, not with, you know, sort of this progressive or maybe even regressive luxury tax threshold that the NBA has. This is a green light. If you thought it was going to cost too much, it's going to cost less now. Mm-hmm. And there are certainly guys that you can go out and get on a one-year deal that can help your team in the here and now. Plenty of them. A lot of teams are going to be looking to shed salary. This is an opportunity for the Warriors to flex their fiscal muscles a little bit. They still have them. As much as they want to pretend like they're, you know, oh, they're so poor right now, they still got the money. They have the cash. I don't know when fans are coming back in, but they'll probably have fans in the suites, and those fans pay a lot of money, more than the entire, you know, Charlotte Hornets stadium can fill, just the fans in the suites.
Well, that's an important point there, because the luxury tax now, the teams are going to get relief in proportion with the revenue that the NBA loses, the basketball-related income that the NBA loses. So the number that's thrown out there a lot is 30%. So let's say the NBA loses 30% or they dip below 30% of what their projected revenue will be. Well, in teams like the Warriors and other luxury tax-paying teams like Philadelphia, et cetera, will get that same relief, that same 30%. So for example, if the Warriors did nothing to their roster but add the number two pick in the draft, who now we know that salary is going to come in slightly more than $8 million, that's going to result in about $15 million in luxury tax savings. That's not even including the TPE, which if they use the full amount of the TPE, with a that could save them upwards of $50 million, according to ESPN's Bobby Marks. So, and this is all based on a if they lose 30% of revenue. But that's, it could be more, it could be less. And that's tied, to me, what's interesting here, tied to the NBA projection, not the Warriors projection.
Right.
And like you just said, I think the Warriors of all these teams are better positioned to make up more of this lost revenue than maybe any other team. And you mentioned the suites there. That is going to be so important to the Warriors. That is something that they are talking about on a daily basis, is how in a socially distanced world they can maybe get people into these luxury suites. Maybe you don't fill out the rest of the arena, but you use these luxury suites. So I think even if the league were to lose 30% of their projected revenue, maybe the Warriors are 20% shy of their projected revenue. And that makes this, the eating what the luxury tax would be on a TPE or the mid-level exception or whatever it is, that much more palatable.
Well, we also have to take into account the world that we live in, right? Like, let's be honest about the situation as it's currently constructed. The coronavirus isn't going away anytime soon, but it might go away in a hurry in a couple of months. We've gotten some really good early returns on RNA vaccines that can be maxed out and have a situation where come NBA playoff time, guess what? We got a bunch of immunity going on. We got antibodies out our ears and everybody gets to funnel into a stadium. I don't know if that would be feasible in San Francisco. We know how conservative the city can be, the state of California can be in regards to it. And that's proving to be a prudent decision given the outbreaks across the country. But this situation could change to the point where you go, okay, well, we might come in, as you just said, 20% less. Well, you can make 20% if you got a full house in the playoffs.
Right.
And this team needs to focus entirely on the things that it can control in this world. And what it can control is, can we compete for a championship? This right now, they can, but it is a stretch. You add a Kelly Oubre, you add a Rudy Gay, you add a Kelly Olynyk, you add a guy. Is he going to put you over the top? Hell no. None of these players are available if they were going to put you over the top. But it's a nice secondary piece, and those secondary pieces are so critical. A guy who can give you a spot start, a guy who can give you, you know, 15 off the bench one night, a guy who can, you know, hold down a couple of different roles for your team, just a guy who can close for you. God, that would be ideal. If you can go ahead and get a Robert Covington, a guy who, let's be real, would probably be closing for you with Draymond at the five. You put Wiggins out there, you know, you put Clay at the two. You have a really big, really wing-centered lineup around Steph. You can really protect him defensively. You can knock down threes with everybody but Draymond. That's a really positive situation. And again, there's nothing holding the Warriors back from doing it other than it would cost way more than the actual money that is being prescribed by the NBA with the TPE.
Right.
And now that money is less. It's just one of those situations where the Warriors talk a big game when it comes to money. And I understand that everybody's hurting, but if you want to win a championship, it's going to cost you. And there are a lot of teams that are going to take themselves out of championship contention, even if they were even in it, in the next couple of weeks. And it's coming on fast and furious, mm-hmm. just because they don't want to put up the moolah. The Warriors are in a position to put up the moolah. Don't let them tell you anything different. This is an opportunity for this team to get markedly better, and they need to take it.
Yeah, it's as I wrote last week. You could talk about the luxury suites. We could talk about getting fans in arenas. You could talk about all this stuff, right? You could talk about getting as many games into a schedule as possible, playing this wild card playoff or whatever it is.
Yeah.
The best way to ensure on the court, obviously, success, but financial success, make the playoffs. Extend your season as long as possible to get fans into arenas. And boy, dude, it feels like everything's coming up Millhouse for the NBA right now, because you've got within a week of them announcing that they're going to get this thing started December 22nd. And you know what? We'll just deal with not having fans. Vaccine with 90%, you know, success rate comes out within days. Yeah. We'll see where that comes down and how quickly we can get that vaccine out to people. But it may end up being a situation where maybe the NBA thought that they would play the whole season without fans, or most of the season without fans. There's an idea that they would play, you know, they would release the first half of the schedule and then the second half of the schedule, and they figure out how many games they have to reschedule. Mm-hmm. Maybe they can just do the whole thing now. I don't know. It depends on when fans are going to be in arenas, when we get the vaccine and all those things. But it seems to be breaking right for the NBA. And with that, it seems to be breaking right for the Warriors. San Francisco has been a little bit more conservative, or a lot more conservative, with opening things up. We'll see how quickly they would be willing to let fans in. But there's going to be a lot of different revenue streams, not only in the stadium, but around that arena too, with all those businesses that are going to open. And when stuff opens up eventually, that's going to be the stuff that people are going to want to do, right? They're going to want to go to restaurants. They're going to go to the hotels, all that stuff that is built on the land that this ownership group owns, not to mention live sporting events. We saw stock prices surge this week with the announcement of the vaccine for all live events, concerts, which Chase Center does a lot of, and sporting events, which Chase Center was built to do. So it kind of feels like stuff is like, I'm not saying everything's like good as gold right now.
No,
there's at least a light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, let's throw it even a step beyond that. You can charge whatever the hell you want now.
Because
you're saying, hey, we're going to need to split up the seats, right? We're going to need to go at 25% capacity. They're not going to be charging the same amount for that ticket. Mm-hmm. Now there's a premium on it. The Warriors break even. The way that it's been described to me, and I don't get to look at the books, but the Warriors as a basketball team break even. Where the Warriors operation makes its money is concerts and stuff around the stadium. If that, you're right, if that stuff opens up, more money to them. If they can put on a concert at the Chase Center anytime soon, oh man. I mean, how much would people, I can tell you how much I'd pay to go to a concert right now. And I'm somebody who's like, listen, wear your mask, be safe about this stuff. you know, we all have our opinions on it, but there's no doubt that it's real and there's no doubt that it's dangerous. But if the city of San Francisco, who I believe deserves, you know, some benefit of the doubt on how they've handled this, I don't think that they're being flippant or, you know, they're certainly not removing restrictions, you know, in a overly expedited rate. If they're saying you can go to a concert and I'll pay 4X. I mean, easy.
Does Metallica open up Chase Center again? They reopen Chase Center?
It would be kind of like that. And the world has changed so much that we forget that not too long ago, we're like, the Warriors have more cash than God. Mm-hmm. And first off, you know, they've probably burned through a good deal of that. But you don't think that Joe Lacob can get a line of credit from anybody? Right. You think that the Warriors aren't bouncing, that the world is going to end and we're never going to have, you know, fans in arenas again or not? Maybe.
The point, like, everybody's hurting right now. And totally. And businesses, and just look at San Francisco on its own. Restaurants across the city have been closing and they'll never reopen again because they don't have the potential cash flow.
But that's a low margin industry where the Warriors are a massive margin industry that's completely backed by the NBA. I mean, the other thing too is they have, you know, they have this corporate backing. They have this almost socialistic model of revenue with the NBA where, you know, if the Warriors start going down, first off, they're going to be the last team that goes down. Even the Lakers would go down before them. The Lakers had to go for the PPP loan. Let's not forget. So this is just an opportunity for them to flex. And this would be the right time to do it. If they had to compete with, let's say, five teams in the NBA, going into this year for a title, that might be, you know, a wishful thinking as it pertains to the Warriors. But let's say there's five teams that you go, okay, those five teams are better than Golden State. I'm not including like Denver. I'm not including, you know, like New Orleans or anything like that. But like Lakers, Clippers, you know, kind of the go-to, the Bucks, maybe the Heat. I don't know. There's one other team in there that we can bring up. Anybody. We'll figure it out later. The Warriors can say, how many teams are going to fall off? How many of those teams are going to push? We can push. We can press our advantage. We have an advantage. Let's press it. And if you don't press it, I think that says a lot about Warriors ownership. I mean, that would be really disappointing for, Joey Lightyears to be like, nah, you know, $20, $30 million. That's just not, it's not doable. I understand when everything's going down saying it's got to be a special player, which of course nobody you're getting for the trade exemption is going to be a special player. But now that it's tied to overall basketball revenue, basically you only have to pay what you have, right? Like if we're all not going to get this big amount of money coming back, you don't have to pay that much more. It's a literal progressive income tax or luxury tax in this situation. Like, you don't have to spend what you don't have. There's just no excuse not to do it now. Just absolutely no excuse. No. And let's be real. When you have a target like this, these conversations can be happening on the side. They can have a deal ready to go for draft day, I guess even beforehand if you really wanted to. This could dramatically change how the Warriors approach their draft. If they have another wing, they might say, okay, it might be James Wiseman time. I don't agree with that personally, but they might decide, hey, we have a Kelly Oubre. We're not drafting a better wing than him. We like him long-term. Let's go out and get a center. Let's go all in on the here and now, which might not be a bad move. Certainly would undercut the value of a number two pick. But the biggest thing is he's got to press the advantage.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Joe Lacob understands maybe more than any other owner in the league how much winning, and we could talk about all this revolutionary stuff that they did, opening Chase Center, blah blah blah. None of that stuff matters if Steph Curry isn't a two-time league MVP, if Kevin Durant doesn't come over in 2016. None of that stuff matters. Joe Lacob, more than any other owner, understands how much winning affects the bottom line. And if it means spending on the TPE or the mid-level exception or whatever, he'll do it, I think, understanding what could happen. But I do want to talk about specific trade exception targets here. Let's do that next year on Locked On Warriors. But first, let's talk about Built Bar. If you're like me, when you get hungry, you can make bad decisions. But the best way to avoid blowing your diet is to be prepared. That's why I always have a box of Built Bars in the kitchen. Not only is this the best tasting protein bar I've ever had, it's the most healthy and it fills me up while I'm busy or I'm on the go. With 18 amazing flavors, including limited time flavors like maple pecan and pumpkin cookie, chocolate chip cookie, Built bars are covered in 100% real chocolate and soft and easy to chew. They taste like a candy bar, but they're low calorie and they're low sugar, while also being high in protein and fiber, making them perfect for keto and other low carb diets. So go to BuiltBar.com, use the promo code LOCKEDON, and you'll get 20% off your next order, plus a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. Again, that's promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at BuiltBar.com. Dieter, I don't know if you know this, but I, months ago, stopped answering any and all questions about the trade exception. I think I wrote so much about the trade exception the first few months after the league. They love talking about this trade exception. And this idea that the Warriors wouldn't spend big unless it's a special player and all the reporting that's been behind that, that's been what they have been saying this entire time. And so for months, I've been going down every, I think I know every player in the league who makes less than $17.2 million now. Right. And yeah. I have written about every single one of those players, I'm pretty sure.
No doubt.
So I know that you have some ideas. You mentioned Robert Covington at the top of the show.
What are
some other guys that you like for the trade exception? By the way, there's something else that you got to that I just want to tease. But yeah. You mentioned how this sort of could affect everything else they do in free agency in the draft. That's something I want to get to because it's a very important point. But let's just talk specific players for the TPE. Who do you like?
I think the Warriors are going to like Rudy Gay the most. And I don't think that there's much argument to be made for Rudy Gay as sort of a second unit, steady, not exactly ISO, but just give him the ball and let him cook, score. I think that there's a lot to be had there. My concern is I would love to get for the Warriors somebody who could close or could reasonably close. And I think there's only two guys that kind of fit that mold, if I'm being totally honest. Maybe three if you want to give Evan Fournier some love. But there's only two guys who fit the mold, and that's Oubre and Covington. Covington, I think, is target number one. I think Kelly Oubre is the kind of reclamation project that, you know, Draymond Green loves reclaiming Phoenix Suns. He thinks that there's something to that. They want to move off Oubre. I get it. They have good young wings. They don't want to pay him what he wants. I don't think the Warriors are going to pay him what he wants, but for a one-year guy, he has upside. He can guard four positions. You can slide him up to a five in a pinch. He really guards four positions pretty well. He's got an edge to him. I think his three-point shot's getting better. I think that he's the kind of player who could really be a nice option for the Warriors. Him and Wiggins and Draymond and Clay and Steph on the floor at the same time. You might be a little more small than if you had Covington, who should be number one, but that would be a really nice closing lineup for the Warriors. And I think him and Draymond would get along swimmingly, just kind of knowing a little bit about those two guys.
You and I disagree on Covington. I don't really want to rehash that because I think my listeners know where I stand on Covington at this point. But
that's fair.
The Kelly Oubre thing, I love Kelly Oubre. I've loved Kelly Oubre since he got into the league. I love his swagger. I love the confidence he plays with. You know me, Dieter. I love guys that play with just like unearned confidence. Like Deion Waiters is one of my favorite players in the league just for that reason.
He backs it up though.
But Oubre backs it up. Waiters does not.
Waiters goes away and Kelly Oubre, you know, backs it up. I mean, he's a really solid wing. Is he going to be a guy who you want starting? No, he's a sixth man. Is he a guy who you can see closing? Sure, on occasion. Not necessarily with all lineups. It might be an Eric Paschal some nights.
I think the days of we know the closing five every night for the Warriors are long gone. They just don't have that luxury anymore.
That's
where most NBA teams, by the way, are. Even the Lakers and the Heat, who just played in the finals, were in that mode. Kelly Oubre, I think, would make sense. I don't know if we're talking about what it would take. It would take more than just the trade exception. This idea of trading down from 2 to 10, not going to happen. The Warriors don't want to move that far back in this draft. They've never wanted to move that far back in this draft.
It'd have to be a three-team deal where they can move into, like, 5. And then the 10 goes somewhere. I mean, that's
or a future first round pick. And I don't think they're not going to be willing to move off the Minnesota pick, top three protected next year. They really, really value that pick. That is either their version to I think they value that pick more than they value the second overall pick this year, because they see it as either a way to you kind of make up for a missed pick this year, next year, if whoever they take at number two doesn't quite pan out. Or the guy obviously this major asset that they can throw into a superstar trade.
Right.
But they have their own first round pick next year too. And maybe if you're Phoenix, you're betting on, hey, the Warriors haven't played in 12 years. Maybe they're rusty and they get off to a slow start. And this pick ends up being somewhere in the high teens, early 20s. That's a nice pick, especially for a guy like Kelly Oubre, who you're not planning to pay anyway. It's not a bad outcome. I like
Oubre. It's pretty. Rich. I mean, to be fair, a first round pick for Kelly Oubre, I don't care where it falls, is a little rich for my blood. And listen, when we do these trade conversations, it's always one team just fleecing the other. There's never been an NBA trade scenario where one team hasn't just absolutely raked another one over the coals conceptually. And you can find out where one's biases lie. And perhaps I'm just a big Warriors homer and just can't get out of my own way. Even, you know, pick 26 for Kelly Oubre in the 2021 NBA draft. I don't think they'd re-sign him just because now, again, we're dealing with a lot of luxury tax on top of that, and you're not going to get the relief. I think that there's, you know, good value in a one-year guy here or, you know, a two-year guy for the right guy who I think is Covington. You disagree? We'll see where the Warriors fall on that, if it's even a possibility. I do think Tillman is selling, but...
if he's selling, he may not be selling to Golden State. I think he's a little too proud maybe to do that, but who knows? There's going to be a lot of teams looking for Covington.
Yeah, he might be a little too broke to choose.
Sure, that's a good point. Who else do you like? Can I throw a name at you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Eric Bledsoe.
Yeah, that's one that has been suggested. I will say this. He would certainly be an excellent regular season player for the Warriors, as he has been in pretty much everywhere else he's gone. There's something deeply messed up with his head come playoff time, and
that's the concern.
It fits a couple of things. I am not big on the notion of sliding Clay to the three full time. I understand that we're playing in a positionless era of basketball, but I like Clay as the two. I like Clay in the backcourt, and making him a three full-time where there's really not a lineup where he is the shooting guard, I don't think is a good recipe. I think that what him and Steph have, as evidenced thousands of times over, is a good thing, and you don't want to mess up that dynamic.
I think Bledsoe would play a six-man role, and he would come in, whether Curry was on the bench, he can come in and slash and kick to Klay Thompson playing the shooting guard spot, or Bledsoe can come in at the two next to Steph and kind of take on the defensive responsibility that Klay Thompson has on that end. So I would view Bledsoe in that area. And Ricky Rubio the same way.
Bledsoe's a better option. If we're going between the two of them, I like Rubio plenty, but I think Bledsoe would be the better option because I can see Bledsoe taking over a game here. But then you get into, do you want to stagger Klay and Steph?
Right. Not as much as you'd want, I don't think. But I think in smaller lineups, you could play all three of them together. I don't know.
So maybe Bledsoe is – maybe there's a good argument that Bledsoe here is a max-out option because he does force you to make difficult decisions as it pertains to your lineup. So maybe that is the right answer on the basis of it's the most difficult one to make work, at least mentally, because you're holding on to dear life to some things that, you know, have existed in the past. You got to adapt and move on. So I'd like Bledsoe a lot now that I really break it down any further.
One more, any more ideas, any more sleeper targets for the TPE before we move on?
You know, I want to
give our listeners what they want. We could sit here honestly for 2 hours and list names and they'll eat this up. But
well, it's deeply appreciated. I think that Kelly Oubre is a name that we probably do need to talk about a little bit more as it pertains to this. If the Warriors really are on James Wiseman, I don't know what Kelly Oubre wouldn't provide, at least for the 2021 season, that James Wiseman they're pretty similar to me. Like, you got one that's established and one that's not. They're going to cost, well, I guess Wiseman would be about $8 million and Oubre is around 12. So there is a difference there, no doubt. But man, it would allow you to go and really lock in on a wing if you go out and get Oubre. And it would probably have to be an after the fact move. But if you don't get another big in the draft,
are you talking Oubre or Olynyk?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm talking Olynyk. Okay. I don't know. There's too many Kellys.
There's a lot more Kellys in the NBA than we need.
Yeah, Olynyk. I'm talking about the corny white dude from Miami. That's who I'm talking about.
Could not. They both have the same first name. Could not be more different as people.
Yeah, extremely different folks. the one who went to Gonzaga. I know about this guy. It is Kelly Olynyk. He's not on my beautiful list here, and so I'm looking at Kelly Oubre. No, I think Olynyk would provide something that the Warriors haven't had in earnest in, I think he's a fairly good defensive player. He's certainly not a lockdown guy. He's not going to, you know, be protecting the rim or anything at a high level, but I think he can play good, solid team defense, mm-hmm. and he can knock down a three. Mm-hmm. And I think that that would be really interesting for the Warriors as a second unit option where, listen, you can run the offense through him. He has really good vision on the floor. I don't think he's like a great passer or anything, but he'll get the ball to the right spot. You can run the offense through him in the high post a little bit. And he, again, pop out. He can run the floor, but he can also pop out and knock down a three. I think that that would be a really interesting dynamic to add to the Warriors' second unit. And then kind of when you need a little bit of a spark, doing that with the first unit as well, instead of a guy like Marquese Chris, instead of kind of one of these, you know, minimum centers that they're certainly going to add. I think there's something to be said there. One other name I'd like to bring up.
Well, the Olynyk is, I want to stay there though. I think it's a perfect fit. I think that the $12.1 million he's owed is pretty steep for the center spot, but like you said, he's expiring. It's right. Given all these luxury tax relief things that we've been talking about, it's not as tough a pill to swallow anymore. And the Warriors have never had a 3-point shooting center.
No.
People like to, like, people view maybe Mo Spates as their three. He wasn't a 3-point shooter, he was a mid-range shooter.
He shot for the elbow.
Olynyk would give them finally a floor spacer that they need. They need to replace a lot of scoring, a lot of shooting, and it's going to take a lot of players to sort of fill that Kevin Durant void. Mm-hmm. I think Olynyk would be a tremendous fit. Passing, he's one of the better passing bigs in the league. Defensively, he's solid. He's not great, but he's solid.
He'll be in
the Warriors
right
have gotten away with solid defensive centers. Let's not act like Bogut and Zaza Pachulia were some all-world defenders when they were playing for the Warriors.
Right.
They were just in the right place. Rebounding, there's a lot to he's a terrible rebounder at his position.
Yes.
But you could do that in groups. You can ask Andrew Wiggins to go out and get rebounds. He's a great rebounder. You can ask Draymond Green to do the same thing. So I think Olynyk would be a good one, and you can get him for nothing. That's the difference between Olynyk and all these other guys. The Heat, if Bob Myers called up Andy Ellisberg with Miami mm-hmm. and said, do you want to get off Olynyk's salary? We'll just take him into our trade exception.
Yes.
He would say, fine, sounds great. Do it. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Let's do a second round pick swap.
See you in the finals.
Call it even. Yeah, exactly. I like it a lot. And again, the dynamic of what he would provide, he fits in second unit role. He allows you to not have to draft James Wiseman, which I like.
He's a different enough from guys like Kevon Looney, Marquese Chris too, that now 100%. You really have that bullpen type feel to the center spot.
A guy who isn't necessarily all that different, but I do think has more upside, maybe especially on the defensive side than Chris and Looney, is Mitchell Robinson in New York too. I think that that's a name. I don't even know if you would need to use the trade exemption on him, just because he makes such little money. But it does seem like New York does not want to extend him, and that he might be a man out of favor. And that's a name that. Maybe you take on a Wayne Ellington as well and take Robinson in as really the piece that you're looking for, but you take in, you know, Wayne Ellington, and then that, you know, for whatever you throw back their way is the trade. They're trying to get off some salary. They don't want to pay that guy. They want to be in a position to make some moves next offseason. Wayne Ellington's in somehow an impediment to that, or, you know, just not paying luxury tax in a year where they're probably not going to have fans in the stands. And hey, we get some Mitchell Robinson on top of it, a really good rim protector, a guy who can certainly, you know, drive to the hoop out of the high post. I think he would be a nice fit. I think he's a really solid center, and the Warriors like really solid centers. And now you have three of them with Chris and Looney and Mitchell Robinson. You can certainly fill 48 minutes with those three, or 40 minutes, whatever you need to get to Draymond at the five late in the game. So I think that's a name too. I think Olynyk is a number one on the list if you're not going with a wing. I will always favor wings, always, because wings are everything in this league. But I do think if you want to go with the big man, and I can see a reason as to why you'd want to go with the big man, that Olynyk needs to be the move.
Well, you hit on something key there, is all this has a domino effect on what else you're going to do in this offseason. That's what I want to talk to next. We're going to go over options with the mid-level exception, how that impacts the draft. We're going to do all that next year on Locked On Warriors. Okay, Dieter, we just talked about some options with the trade exception. By the way, one other name I want to throw out there at the center spot, Jonas Valanciunas. I don't know if he's available, but I'd at least kick the tires on him. And that kind of comes back to what we're talking about, because if they want to use this trade exception, go get a center. Mm-hmm. Then you're right. They don't need to use this number two pick on James Wiseman. Or if they want to use the mid-level exception, that's the other part of this. The trade exception could be used to get so many guys. We mentioned wings like Rudy Gay, Robert Covington, Kelly Oubre, and Ricky Rubio, Eric Bledsoe,
Josh Richardson. Yeah. We can go on and on.
With the mid-level exception, I think that you can use that to go out and get a really good center. Marc Gasol, yeah. Serge Ibaka, Paul Millsap, if you think he's a center. Mason Plumlee, who makes a lot of sense to me as well. I think that you could kind of get similar value with the mid-level exception that you can in the trade exception. Meanwhile, the wing options in free agency are nada. I mean, we're talking about Mo Harkless. That's the name that keeps coming up.
Hey, you know what? And I wrote down Mo Harkless 4 times at 5 o'clock this morning. I like Mo Harkless. So let's not, okay.
He's a 30% 3-point shooter who has worse playoff issues than Eric Bledsoe. So I don't know.
He just hasn't had a chance.
He's had a chance. He had a chance at Portland. But that's what we're talking about. We're talking about like Mo Harkless, best case scenario with the mid level exception versus
Marc
Gasol at center.
Rondé Hollis Jefferson.
Okay. See, this is not going to be fun.
See, I like Rondé Hollis Jefferson. He's the most versatile.
You could get him at the minimum, maybe.
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay. No, but I'm talking about mid-level exception guys.
We're talking what? 5.2 million, something like that?
5.7.
5.7.
And the point being is if you have all these options at center with the trade exception, with the mid-level exception, then that clears a lot of that creates a lot of different options for the Warriors in the draft with the number 2 pick.
Right.
All of a sudden, this idea, and by the way, I think this idea that they have this huge void at center is slightly overblown. When we talk about why the Warriors need James Wiseman, I actually think that people say, oh, it's the biggest need on the roster. No, the biggest need on the roster is more depth
wings.
At the perimeter.
Wings.
Absolutely.
It's always wings.
It's like, oh, they got Andrew Wiggins, problem solved. I'm like, wait, are you trying to tell me you're replacing Kevin Durant, Andre Iguodala, and Sean Livingston with Andrew Wiggins? That's fun. No, they need – and by the way – let's really break down if they ended up getting James Wiseman and you still carry 2 traditional centers and which you would still need to because James Wiseman is young and not developed to the point where you could just rely on him to play 30 minutes a night and Draymond Green's still closing most games, then you've really only got 10 or 12 minutes to give James Wiseman every night. So let's not act like he's going to walk in playing 28 minutes a night.
Hey, that's $1 million for every minute he'll play.
Perfect. So I think that they could use a perimeter. Using the mid-level exception or the trade exception on a big would open up all their options to just go ahead and take the best player available. Maybe they still think that that's James Wiseman. That could be the case.
The front office, I
believe, is still split on James Wiseman slightly. But I don't think it's just this guarantee that they're going to take him at number 2 if he's there. I think if Anthony Edwards is there, if LaMelo Ball is there, and if some Danny Avdija is there, there's going to be a conversation.
Can we have this conversation real fast? I mean, if Edwards is there too, they're taking Edwards, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really think there's that much conversation to have. He's the best wing in the draft. Mm-hmm. He has the highest upside, I think, of any player in the draft. You can maybe argue Ball, but I really do think he has the highest upside. Your concerns are about his motor and his ability to, you know, kind of stay focused in games. That's just a bet on the Warriors' culture, which they're always going to make. I think it's a no-brainer if Edwards is there. Now, I don't know if Edwards is going to be there. The Timberwolves are throwing up all kinds of smoke signals. I don't know. But if he's there, I just think, again, you got to take him. He gives you – if you're looking for that Kawhi option, right, and I know that Kawhi wasn't taken at number 2, but if you're looking for that guy who can give you solid minutes in the interim while you develop him into what you hope to be a superstar, name another guy who fits the bill better than, you know, Edwards. I can see Halliburton, to be fair. I can see Halliburton. I can see some of these wings, but then you're wasting value at number 2. It's Edwards or trade down, I think, are the really only 2 options that the Warriors have. Because, again, I'm just not in on Wiseman. I don't think he's worth the money. I like him as a player, but it just doesn't fit the Warriors to me.
I think if you gave the Warriors truth serum, they would have so much preferred to have the 4th pick in this draft and the 2nd pick and just taken Tyrese Halliburton at number 4. But they are there at number 2. There is a rare chance for them to get some upside. Maybe they trade down to 3 or 4 or something like that. But I just don't think that it's not as easy coming up with trade down options as I think fans want to believe there is.
It's even trickier because, like, the number 6 pick, Atlanta, they want Edwards bad. They want the Georgia pipeline. And that just feels just out of the realm of where the Warriors would be willing to drop to.
It's too far. I think that they would go as far as maybe number 4, maybe number 5. And
I don't think Chicago or Charlotte are trying to move up here.
Yeah, I mean, unless Charlotte off – and look, by the way, last week was James Wiseman week. This week is LaMelo Ball week. next week will be Anthony Edwards week or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
But – If Charlotte is really this enamored with James Wiseman, maybe you can get Miles Bridges out of them and then move down to the number three, or a future first rounder and move down to number three. And that would be worth it if you're the Warriors, just to get something if you don't love whoever's there at number two.
Yeah.
Would Chicago throw in Wendell Carter Jr. to move up to number from 4 to 2? If that's on the table, it would be at least a conversation you have to have with the Warriors. Again, 100%. If the guy that you're not enamored with is there at number two, if you're enamored with anybody at number two. But I still ultimately think that when push comes to shove, all that stuff is not going to be enough. Those offers may or may not even be on the table, and that the Warriors are just going to have to kind of hold their nose and take a guy at number two.
Yeah, which is such a great position to be in. What do you think Cleveland wants to do at five?
I think they want to stay there.
Yeah. I don't understand their roster. I don't understand.
I don't think they understand their roster.
Yeah. They did hire John Beilein to be their head coach last year, so clearly they're not on top of things.
I forgot about that.
That was pretty awesome.
All right, anything else we want to hit before we get out of here? I mean, I think what the takeaway from this whole conversation is that now we knew before all this whole pandemic that the Warriors were well positioned to rebuild around Steph, Clay, and Draymond. Mm-hmm. And I think there was a lot of concerns when the pandemic hit and the Warriors lost about $50 million in their projected revenue. They were short about $50 million, which is very, very hurtful. That's almost your entire luxury tax payment. And now they're going to get some relief here. And I think you wrote this pretty perfectly in your column. They really have no excuse not to just go for it now.
Yeah.
Whatever excuse you thought you had, you don't. This is a relief for the Warriors, but if they were looking for an excuse, they don't have it anymore. And by the way, I don't think that they were looking for an excuse, but you can't sell anything to your fans now as far as, hey, we lost some money. It's just not going to fly anymore. They've got to go all in now.
The Warriors have literally created a public persona of being big money, big market, big spenders. You cannot in good conscience go to your fans and say we cheaped out.
No.
You can't do it. You can't blame anybody. You could maybe have pulled it off when you just said the pandemic, man, and it was going to cost 4x what we thought it would. And, you know, listen, we didn't like any of the players. I can buy that. It's still a hard sell. I still thought they should have done it because you talk this big game. Now you got to back it up. But you definitely can't do it now that the NBA is basically like, please go out and sign anybody you want. Like the NBA might as well have rolled out a carpet to go get a Kelly Olynyk or a Kelly Oubre. Either Kelly is good for me.
Let's get a Kelly to the Warriors. I think that's a good place to end it. Remember to subscribe to new episodes of Locked On Warriors wherever you listen to podcasts. Please rate, review, say nice things about the show. You could send your comments and questions to me on Twitter at WC Goldberg or email them to WGoldberg@BayAreaNewsGroup.com. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and I'll see you here tomorrow morning.